Mike Zettmeyer is a partner at EY, specialising in financial services and sustainability. EY has done a fantastic job delivering storytelling campaigns, and their current social uplift campaign is a powerful example of how to normalise the experience of disability, neurodivergence and diversity. Mike believes storytelling, especially when it involves emotional content, can be a powerful tool for community connection and personal growth. In this conversation, he shares a memorable story of being recognised by a colleague with dyslexia in public. As a result of watching one of his videos, she had realised that she had been placing limitations on her own career progression. Hearing Mike's story ultimately helped her see possibilities and opportunities ahead. In this conversation, we talk about storytelling in leadership and the unique perspectives dyslexic thinking brings to organisations. Mike, wonderful to see you. I am so looking forward to this conversation. Thank you for your time and for joining us today.
Pleasure.
And I wonder if we could kick off with an open question. We're going to be talking about confidence. We're going to be talking about, I suppose, the state of the nation or nations when it comes to disability, neurodivergence, and so on. So my question to you is, why is this topic so important to the people who'll be listening and watching?
So as somebody who is in a leadership role who is neurodiverse and dyslexic, I haven't always been as open and transparent about that. And what I've found is that through both professionally and personally, sharing that experience, that lived experience, has opened up the opportunity for other people who haven't had the confidence to do that, but also to start opening up how people can engage in that discussion, but also understand how that it's not a disability. It's not a limitation. And it's interesting that, remember after the pandemic, when we first got together physically, and I was at my first event, external event, and I talked about it. We were there to talk about something completely different. And we ended up talking about it on a panel. And the number of people who came up afterwards who both had relatives, nieces, nephews, children of their own who were struggling and wanted to talk, because the first time, and obviously there was having physically got together again, first time that they could meet somebody who has been successful and this wasn't something that had become a limitation for them.
Very powerful. Mike, there's something about paying it forward, making it easier for those that come behind us. So I, at Purple Space, and EY are a partner of Purple Space. We're very privileged to have you as part of the community. And I've had the personal privilege of seeing EY grow and flourish and continue to go further and faster when it about helping the lived experience of people with disabilities to be who they are. My prediction when I set up Purple Space nearly 10 years ago was that our ability to provide assets and storytelling campaigns to help people build their inner confidence was as important as it was to build the leadership capability of ERGs. You do employee resource groups at EY really well. But my question, you're a partner in the financial services sustainability sector. You've had an incredible career. But I wonder if you could take us through that, the storyline for your career, maybe post-graduation. Tell us a little bit about the organisations that you've worked for and your pathway.
It's nearly 35 years since our graduation, which is quite a hard thing to say sometimes. So I came out of university with an honours in physical geography. Had no plans to get into financial services. Came out into recession and needs must. And genuinely, I was very fortunate. I ended up working for a subsidiary of British Telecom, had a fabulous graduate program for 2 years that provided me with the the groundings and the skills having come out of school and university and academia to understand how I could be effective and start developing the skills to be able to work in commerce and business. After that, I went into Coopers & Lybrand as an audit firm and an advisory firm, and started growing around and understanding and providing advice, in particularly in, obviously in financial services. It was probably at that point then I started meeting some of the challenges around being neurodiverse, which is the expectations around both time and quality, be able to synthesize and bring information and share that information in written documentation, and we'll come back to that later. But it was that point that you started to realize both that there are limitations in what you are good at, and there are limitations in also the things you're very good at. And it's understanding how do you balance those two and recognize that actually it's not wrong to ask for help, and actually recognizing things that you don't do very well. People will help if you ask, because in general, people actually are interested in other people and helping them make them successful. I have had some absolutely wonderful assistants who've on many occasions have read stuff that I've written at the end of the day and said, "You can't send that." And they are part of my team. And it's not just that they help me with scheduling stuff; they help me make sure that what I'm presenting out into the market meets the expectations I would expect, I would want to be able to deliver, and for the organization I work for. But it's always been around technology. So then I worked at IBM, doing very large, complex, difficult projects, often multi-entity, multi-geography, tens of thousands of people who are being impacted by the work that we're doing, and often very material. And you sort of go, okay, so how somebody who's neurodiverse, how do you do that? But you have a set of skills in the way that you look at the world, which is very different from the way other people do. And that is a strength. That's hugely valuable when you know how to apply it, but also recognize that in many cases, it's difficult to describe that to somebody who doesn't look at the world in that way. So part of my job, and I actually had it yesterday, where I go, okay, I have to remember the way I talk and describe things may be very different from the way that other people look at the world and look at problems. And I have to take the time, but also be respectful of that their point of view is as valid as mine, and then share that in a way that helps them understand that view. And actually, being rigorous about that helps actually refine and obviously, in many cases, challenge my view of the world. And that, if I think about some of the stuff I'm doing now with Ernst & Young, EY, things that we've just completed doing some work last year around looking at carbon markets. That's a multinational. It's covering the global north, global south. It's obviously hugely purposeful. It links NGOs, institutions for public good, charitable good, with financial markets, people who are focused on commercial outcome. Very different views of the world, but actually being neurodiverse is one of the things that actually helps you look at those from a different perspective.
A real asset. Mike, tell me, you shared with me that you haven't always been so open and transparent about having dyslexia. I'll come back to the six-year-old in a moment, but just thinking about your own career, when was it that you started to be a little bit more comfortable in your skin? And was there a specific moment where you started to become more open about your experience?
I think there's two answers to that. There was an event, and I sort of referenced it earlier, and that's at Coopers & Lybrand, where we all go through that journey, which is something didn't go well, and it was not good at all in the materials that I produced. And a director in the firm, an old friend, came up to me and said, "What is this?" I mean, he was the director responsible for a piece of work. He said, "This is rubbish." I said, "Look, I have been toiling and trying to get this right." And it was at that point I disclosed as dyslexic. And the guy, and Steve Barnett, he's retired now, but he said, why didn't you say anything? And at that point, he said, right, okay, what do we need to do to help you?
What was your reply when he said, why didn't you? I'm interested. What was your actual reply?
I'd be challenged to remember that,
yeah.
Kate. But
give me an ish.
I can tell you, the emotional relief.
Yeah.
When I joined British Telecom, I'd been very transparent and said I had dyslexia. And you've gone through it and you go, I'm doing all right. I don't need to share this. I can make this work. I can be like everybody else. And you can't. It's hugely tiring. And you're going to get caught out because there are things I am really bad at. But they're, and I go back to my previous point, if you're open and transparent about it, most people will be there to help. But it's also building up the, and you touched on it yourself, Kate, which was part of the language, is how do you engage and create an environment where it's okay to talk about it. It's normal. It's not something that's different, but also you build the skills, the tool, the techniques to be able to do that. I built up skills, techniques to be able to check myself by being dyslexic. I don't send emails out really after, and somebody will tell me I do, and they're right. Any material email, probably after about 6:30, 7 o'clock, I'll probably sit on it until the next morning. I might write it, but I will sit on it until the next morning because I've sent stuff out and I look in the morning and go, did I really say that?
Yeah, I hear you.
But the other side to that is you get comfortable in your skin. And then I stopped sort of being actively engaging and taking interest, not just in being neurodiverse, but sort of other sort of disability. And then probably 4 years ago at EY, we started looking at, recognize that this was important for our future as a firm and being able to be not just an inclusive a culture and environment, and we've still got a journey to go on that, but it's also our future is our success is predicated on having an environment where we can bring these people in with different views, perspectives, different backgrounds, different learning experiences, because that's what the future holds. We have to respond to that. And we can't take just one perspective of that world. You need that diverse set of thinking to be successful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's great to see. I want to come back to the six-year-old. And you share with me that you were diagnosed with dyslexia, six and a half. What triggered that? One of the peculiarities of neurodivergence is quite often people are either misdiagnosed or not diagnosed until quite late in life. And sometimes that's helpful and sometimes it doesn't add any value. What was your experience as a youngster?
So you have to bear in mind, we're now talking early 70s. Yeah. Dyslexia wasn't recognised really as any form of, at that time, described as disability. It wasn't recognised in schools. Teaching saw it as just kids who are lazy. There are two events. One is my mother's Dutch and her brother was later in life diagnosed as being dyslexic. But also there was an event spent some of my childhood in the Middle East. And my parents received my sort of first school report, which was... I think I still have it somewhere. I ought to get it framed, which said, Mike's a lovely boy, but he's not going to go far. He probably should go into carpentry. That's not saying that carpentry is not a skilled job, but basically I was saying, I literally sat at the back of the class because I couldn't retain information and the way that was being presented to me. And basically as a six-year-old, my school just washed their hands of me and said, he can't do anything. At that point, my parents, particularly because they had already had that lived experience, started to ask questions and trying to explain why I literally could not retain information. I mean, I had a teacher in sort of preschool who'd sit down with me I'd get it by the end of the day. I hadn't spent all day rote. Next morning, wasn't there. And that's, yeah, I don't think people understand how hard that is for a child, because you're in an environment where generally kids love learning, and you're the kid there who's can't remember anything, can't spell. I couldn't read until I was 9. But when I suddenly was able to read, the first book I read was The Hobbit. And then by 10, I'd already read Lord of the Rings, all books.
So what kept you going? There must have been something that would have sustained your inner confidence, whether that's your parents or something, your default personality, because you clearly have something about you, Mike. You can't be a partner of one of the top 4 professional services firms without retaining some knowledge. So who and how did you sustain your learning and your inner confidence to keep going in studies as well as work?
I think there's no doubt, and I am hugely fortunate that I was diagnosed early, because before I had built up a set of behaviours and a view about what I could or couldn't do, I was then introduced to learning techniques that allowed me to be able to not cross the board, but was able to learn in a way that I kept abreast with other equivalent children.
Yeah.
And in some cases, accelerate, no question about it. And that comes down to 2 things. One is in the environment, because I went, my parents lived abroad, there was no educational support in the countries they were living in. So I came back to the UK, and part of the decision was to find a school where they had a program. And bear in mind, this is early stage, we're talking in sort of 76, 77, that would provide that educational support. And I, even to this day, my first teacher, Mrs. Royal, wonderful, because her absolute belief that I, as a child, both had the ability and the right, she provided that support. And the special needs lady, Mrs. Mackay, twice a week, I'd be taken out lessons, and it wasn't seen as detrimental. Everybody, the culture was that was accepted. I needed to learn. Nobody hid the fact that I had, and we still call it special needs. I don't see it special needs. I need to learn differently. But that was and I am hugely grateful to them as individuals, but the environment they created that allowed me to do that. Because I don't think I would have got to where I am today.
Yeah. There's a lot of resonance in what you say. To others with lived experience of disability and neurodivergence, you know, the mentors, those that create a step change in our career or studies. Mike, coming back to Cooper's and coming back to your colleague who shared with you that your report was perhaps not up to scratch, and moving beyond that, what are the things that you did and or do differently now to be able to meet any work challenges head on?
So it's a combination of both in your private life and also in your professional life. I've talked about my assistant Stacey, who is hugely helpful in quickly turning around and asking stuff. It's fascinating using artificial intelligence now.
Yeah.
That I, as somebody who's neurodiverse, maybe not great in representing ideas and concepts in writing, AI is a complete step change. And that, I think, will have a big impact for people like me going forward, particularly younger people who that will become first nature. I definitely am very open, and I will sit on a call and say, guys, I'm going to need some help. I can't represent this information in a written form. because that's not my skill set. Who can help me? And so I'm very open and transparent about that. And we've also here at EY, we've spent time, we have a campaign called Social Uplift, which is telling stories, same as what we're doing here, Kate. But we've taken people with both visible and hidden diversity and disabilities and asked them to tell their stories to create an environment where it's normal and it's acceptable, but also supporting that with guidance and training around how do you have the conversation, what are the tools and techniques, both for people who may have a disability or diversity, but also on the side as well. I had the same challenge when Black Lives Matter. I really struggled to understand how I could engage in that dialogue because I haven't had the training. I haven't had the opportunity to engage in that dialogue. But when you do, it's amazing the response you get, but also the opportunity to be able to understand a different view. That's definitely, and that's what I've done in my professional life. I think on there's a recognition. It's hard sometimes dealing with something being neurodiverse when you're constantly using tools and techniques to engage with in a way that would be works for other people around you. And that's tiring, both mentally and physically. And it's only relatively recently I've sort of reflected on some of the choices I've made outside in my personal life without consciously realizing that those choices have been made, which provide a opportunity to decompress. So I live on a farm. My wife and I have run a breeding business for sport horses for 30 years now. It's only recently I recognized that that is a very significant part of the mechanism how I decompress and recover, because I have an opportunity to spend time in nature, outside. I can spend time alone, so my brain is quiet, which it isn't very often, but also gives me time to, it's slow time. Allows me to catch up and start processing things. And it's only probably in the last maybe 5 or 6 years I've actually realized that unconsciously we had created that. There were for other reasons as well. But how important that is. And that's the other thing I'd always sort of, if I was to sort of reflect on what I would say to myself and my younger self, was that's an important thing to think about. Because if you're neurodiverse, you work harder. And I appreciate, and I'm sure people who aren't, who are more atypical, and that's a spectrum in its own right, they work hard as well. There's no question about it. But I think that I've had to learn how to manage that, because the fatigue sometimes is utter. So you get on holiday and you'll literally sort of keel over after 2 days.
I hear you. Mike, one of the things I've seen EY do so well is storytelling campaigns, as you have shared, and the way in which you've set up impairment-specific or disability-specific, neurodiverse-specific sub-networks is extraordinary. Seen that happen over a number of years. What, in your mind, are both the business as well as the individual positive impacts of sharing stories of difference? What do you see, either in a micro impact of one person or kind of group organizational transform change?
So our sort of network has continued to evolve and to adapt. So we actually, for many years, we had the dyslexic network, and then we brought that together with neurodiverse. Brought that together with ability, because there's a recognition that the lived experience and learning and the stories across all of that is valuable, rather than looking at one something as specific. And really, the thing that blows me away and is Madeline, who runs one of the co-chairs of the Ability Network, it's just the huge energy and commitment they bring, but also the fact that it's not just people who have diversity, it's also people who don't are part of that. And that might be because they have children, nieces, nephews, friends. And also it's not closed just to EY people. So it's open to friends of the firm, friends and family. And that creates a huge, warm and welcoming, but also supportive for different parts of the journey. Because for everybody throughout where they are in their journey, it's different. And I hold them in huge admiration. I had a giggle after we talked about storytelling. They came to me and said, "You realize you're an ambassador for it?" And I go, "Ambassador for what?" Okay, I hadn't realized that was going to be one of the...
Got a new promotion there.
But it really sort of opened my eyes up as to how important that community and the support a community provides to help people navigate difficult things, difficult topics. We touched on storytelling and had this one of these events, it was quite hard to make a decision to do the storytelling because I'm a white middle-aged man of a privileged background. You sort of go, why should I stand up? Aren't I going to be provide a target? Why should I, in that position, talk about it? And we had a long conversation about it, and the team got me comfortable with it. And I realized later why it was the right thing to do, because I was sitting on a train going north, and a lady sat down in front of me and she said, "I know you." And I'm going, "I haven't got a Scooby who you are." And I'm pretty good normally at remembering faces, if not names. And we sort of worked it through, and she was a senior manager in EY, and she said, "I saw your video, your story. I didn't know that you could be a partner and you could be dyslexic." And I said, "What made you think that?" I said, "Well, I'm dyslexic, and I'd always assumed that I'm an S senior manager, and that's all I can do." And I said, no, you've got a set of capabilities and skills which will take you a long way. And it's a choice you have to make. Not everybody wants or desires to be a partner. I never desired to be a partner. I got here by accident, but also by support by others. And we had a long conversation. We were there for an hour and a half on the train. And at the end of it, she said, those limitations that I had placed on myself about what I could or couldn't do, that those barriers, that glass ceiling, they're not true. They're not real. They're things I've applied to myself. And I said, yeah, you have the opportunity if you want to, and it's your choice. Don't take what other people tell or what you can or can't do. That applies not just to people who have disability and diversity. For social background, economic background, upbringing, lived experiences, look at what you can do. And my background is hugely diverse. I've lived in many, many different places, and I'm very lucky in that I've had that experience, which is what's possible, rather than it's not.
Yeah. Wise words. Mike, building on that, at Purple Space, we're building collateral and assets, and this podcast series is part of that, to support people to build inner confidence and resilience while navigating experiences of difference, disability, neurodivergence. And as part of that, we have crafted what we call the six fundamentals, the six hurdles. I know you've had a quick look at these, but in your mind, and building on your last, I suppose, piece of advice, what would you offer to those that come behind us about the learns that you have? What have you learned about either yourself or colleagues that you'd pass on?
So, you need to have a level of personal confidence and resilience. And resilience isn't when somebody knocks you down, just get up. Resilience is about how do you learn, how do you adapt. And that's hard. And to do that, you can't do that in a vacuum. You can't do that by yourself. And that's why things like the Ability Network is so crucial, because it gives you a frame of reference to learn from others who share their experiences. So if I was to talk to myself when I was younger, one is seek that support, be open. Share stories and share experiences, because humans are storytellers. That's why we're doing this. And a story with the emotional context and the implications of that are hugely powerful. When we talk about disability and diversity, we're seeing that as generally society, and I'm delighted that we as a society are starting to become more open and comfortable with dialogue, and people are building capabilities to be able to understand and appreciate, contribute to that story. It's a rich pattern of life. I work in sustainability. I've had a hugely fortunate life to be able to spend a lot of time seeing the rich tapestry of life and how it is interrelated and dependent on each other. So are we. We are humans. We rely on each other. We need to be able to understand other people's perspectives, take an interest, but do that within an environment where people are comfortable, and to learn the skills and abilities to be able to engage in that dialogue, but also for you to share your stories so people can understand and relate to it. It's not just a story that is something that's very interesting, I don't forget about it. And we've heard it this week in the Holocaust, listening to the survivors. Those stories are stories that are hugely moving, not just context what happened, but what happened to the individual. So learn from those.
Like a quick supplementary to that, what would you say to those individuals who find it really hard to identify with the lived experience of dyslexia and not ready to share? Is there anything you would...
So that is a perfectly reasonable, and there is nothing wrong with being in that position. And I know
personal
people...
personal choice, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And people can get very wound up and agitated about that. Certainly in the professional environment, we're living in a information-rich, complex environment, speed at which it's changing, which sometimes can be very overwhelming to people with different neurodiversity traits. And I think there's a recognition that finding somebody who you have a trusted relationship with who can help you start engaging in that discussion, I think, is hugely helpful. Now, often many professional businesses, large-scale businesses, have a sort of manager-counselor relationship. It's not the case in smaller businesses, and I fully appreciate that. But looking to identify somebody, and it may be somebody who is younger, maybe somebody who's in a less senior role, who can help engage in that dialogue. That would be my counsel.
Yep, very wise. Mike, I can't believe how quickly this goes. It's time. I suppose my final question is really about looking up and out. So we have a tradition in these podcasts that we ask the previous interviewee to pose a question to the next. And the question that you have been asked is, what's next when it comes to disability, diversity, equity, inclusion? You know, we live in a challenged globe, and different parts of the globe may have different experiences or views about the value of diversity. But where do you see the opportunities going forward? You mentioned AI. There's some fantastic opportunities there. But look, that's a loaded question. What's your thoughts?
Back in 2019, I think it was, we did a piece of work with Made by Dyslexia, and contributed that to into some work that the World Economic Forum is doing, looking at the future of the workplace. What are the skills that we need in the future? And actually, the year was 2025. So it's very appropriate since we're in 2025. So what they were identifying was that in the world from we are here today looking forward, we need skills which are, we have diversity of thinking, we have systems thinking, we have network thinking. Now, those are words people go, okay, what does that mean? The world we live in is very networked, whether that's on through the internet, through the connections between decisions and economic activity. We're increasingly recognizing in sustainability and climate change the connectivity that exists between complex systems in which we live, not only have economic activity and then the relationship between them. And for us to be able to respond to those and understand those, we need people who not only can understand those and think about those in those complex ways, but also can design ways to be able to look at those and interpret those sets of information and draw this decision insightful information out of it. And people with neurodiverse capabilities have capabilities that are, in many cases, unique, that allow them to be able to start asking and processing that information. There's a lovely, I studied glaciology and spent time working in the Arctic. It's probably about 3 or 4 years ago, I started taking some of the photographs and putting them behind me in my sort of virtual backdrop after lockdown. Everybody loved them. And then I started with sort of saying to people, look, in that environment, it's just not the glacier melting at the front, but this is how it all flows together. And they're going, how do you know that? I'm going, can't you see it? Don't you see the world in a way that you actually see how the ice is flowing against the geology and how the geology interacts with it and how the ocean impacts the ability? And I go, oh, wow. That really sort of brought it home to me that in that instant, I look at the world completely differently from somebody else and I can process information in a different way than somebody else. But they process the information in a different way. And we need to build up the ability to be able to engage and understand. And yes, and technologies like artificial intelligence will help us represent information in a way that we can then digest it and share it.
Wonderful stuff. Mike, you remind me of the Richard Bransons, the Bill Gates. Yeah, the diversity of human talent that can shed new thinking on global challenges we have today. Mike, thank you so much for this. Again, in tradition, do you have a question for our next interviewee? What would you like to ask them?
So I'm going to build off the question for the previous interviewee. How do we help people understand their ability and how it connects with the opportunity that presents for them? So I go back to the conversation I had with a colleague and a lady on the train who said, I can't do that. What do we need to do differently? And obviously these podcasts and the huge compliments to you, Kate, and Purple Space is how do we provide ways to be able to help people think what they can do, not what they can't do?
Mike Zettmeyer, thank you so much. I will carry that question carefully to our next interview. Thank you for your time, your insights, and thank you for being you.
Thank you, Kate. Pleasure to be here.
Disability is a story of talent, joy, creativity, and transformation, just as much as being a story of challenge, of struggle, or dramatic change. But we don't always turn up the noise on the millions who live really successful working lives at the same time as managing disability or neurodivergence. They are the norm, not the exception. So if you want to learn more from the millions doing really well in work at the same time as managing disability, go and visit our website, www.purplespace.org and then zap this film to someone you think would find the learning of real interest.